5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tom Iannelli here with you. Another amazing Croc podcast to help you in your survivorship journey. Angel Santana, the best co-host God ever created on the other side of the computer. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. How are you, my friend?
Hello, hello, hello. How are you doing? I feel like the air and the quality of the air is starting to get better because the Croc podcast is back on the air.
Yep. Well, let's clarify that for some of our listeners who are out of the area. So over the last couple of days, we have had a tremendous, disruption in our air quality due to fires, wildfires in Canada.
Yeah.
So it has been actually, I'm going to use that analogy in today's podcast about some of that haziness that we've experienced, and it's been extraordinarily dangerous. Can you imagine, Angel, forget about, you know, for the general population, imagine a cancer survivor with lung cancer or head and neck cancer having to, you know, go outside and do things. It must have been very difficult for our survivors during these couple of days in the Northeast.
Absolutely. That was going to be a question for me to you, actually, be about that.
Yeah, totally. So, Angel, we're going to step on some toes today. And for the next 3 weeks, we're going to start a new module. And it's going to be a very controversial module. And I think it's a module that we have sort of ignored for now 2 and something years. And it's time that we address it. And the topic we're going to be talking about over the next couple of weeks is about the second opinion. So cancer survivors and the whole why, when, and how to get a second opinion, and most importantly, how, when, and why to change doctors. So it's one of those kind of sensitive kind of modules because there's a lot of feelings that are involved. There's a lot of potential uncomfortableness. That's not a word, but we make them up here. There's a lot of people who get very anxious about these types of subjects, about second opinions. But we're talking about cancer. We're not talking about sweet potatoes, right? So this is big stuff. And I think we need to, you know, dig in right now. What do you say?
Let's go. Controversy creates cash. But in this situation, controversy creates better outcomes because things get better when things are put out.
You know, exactly. Angel, that's great. But, you know, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. And I think that what we'll do over the next 3 weeks is actually look at all aspects of the second opinion. And I think people will be kind of surprised about what we come up with. So I always try to start the podcast with a story, usually a personal story about, you know, something that I've observed or has happened to me in my career. And tonight is no exception. So maybe 30 years ago, 25 years ago, one of my colleagues, a pretty rambunctious urologist, you know, he was pretty larger than life, you know, with a real big personality and a real big ego to go with that personality, was talking to one of his patients, and the patient came to see me afterwards. And the patient said to him, "Doctor," and I won't embarrass him, X and X, you know, "Dear Dr. Smith, hey, Dr. Smith, I was wondering, you know, you just told me I have prostate cancer. I'm going to go into the city and get a second opinion." And he said with a straight face, "Get out of my office. Leave my office now." And the patient thought at first he was just kidding around. But the patient had come back to see me because they had seen me as well, very upset, visibly shaking. Wow. About, you know, being kicked out of their doctor's office about just by bringing up the subject of going for a second opinion. So I think historically, and again, this is not all doctors, any practitioners out there listening, I do not presume to say that our entire profession are filled with pompous, arrogant people. But, you know, more then than now, that was not an uncommon thing for a doctor to take that very personally, for a doctor to say to a patient, "I'm not going to expend any of my services, resources, time, talent. I'm not going to do anything for you if you're going to go for a second opinion and then leave and have your treatment somewhere else. So that was, again, I don't want to say it was common, but it was not uncommon either. It was almost like going to buy a car, and the person would, this actually happened to me. And I said, okay, I'm interested in this car. How much will it cost? And they said, we can't tell you unless you buy the car tonight here. And I go, well, how can I buy the car if you don't tell me how much it costs? And they said, well, we're not going to tell you because if we tell you, then you're going to take that number and you're going to shop it around to the next guy, you know, to the next dealership next door. And I left thinking, wow, what a broken system. So you can imagine, you know, how some of that stigma that our survivors have still even figuring out how to tell their doctors that they're interested in a second opinion. And what I had said in our blurb that's going to go on the website, you know, is you've just been diagnosed with cancer. You're out of your head with terror. You can't feel your feet. You feel like you want to lose your cookies. Your head is spinning. Your family is devastated. They don't know what to do. The first thing that comes out of their minds is you got to get a second opinion. You got to get out of the community and you have to go to the big centers and get a second opinion. And from that moment, that causes a lot of tenseness and anxiety. How do you do it? Is it the right thing to do? Do I need to do this? There's so many questions that go through their minds. And I want to take a few weeks and really go through it nice and thoroughly and very slowly and, you know, see if we can help our people out. So, Angel, I think I've said this many times on our podcast. In my spiel, when I see a patient and I'm talking to them about whatever cancer it is they come to see me for, I do everything. I go through all the alternatives of care and all the different practitioners and all of the different treatment options and the side effects and things. And at the end, I do three things. And it's almost like a ritual. And I have OCD. So once I get hooked in, it's like every single patient, it's the same way for every single one. It's number one, answering questions. Number two, sharing my cell phone. And number three, offering a second opinion. So that is part and parcel, straight up what happens. And I do that because of that experience I had with that practitioner. And I always want to make sure I begin a relationship with a patient and their family with them knowing that I support any possibility or any thought process they have but haven't articulated to me that they're interested in going to see another caregiver somewhere else, either for only an opinion or even to have their treatments. So we're going to kind of get into it from there. Any thoughts so far?
I have a question, actually. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
Do you find, and forgive me if it's slightly off topic, but on topic, do you find that also in addition to hearing the word second opinion, that it's also based on the area that we reside? For example, we live in upstate New York, and the stigma is that the better quote unquote doctors are in New York City. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I'm actually going to address that. And thank you for bringing that up.
Okay.
That's going to be sort of, I think it's actually bullet point four, actually.
Okay. So let's hold that question then. I'll re-ask it again when you get to bullet four.
All right. Very good. Yeah. So the first thing I want to talk about is this, that we're dealing with cancer survivors and we're dealing with a diagnosis. We're dealing with a disease that just by definition is difficult. And when I say difficult, not just in prognosis, in life or death, or even in the treatment and management, I'm talking about difficult in just trying to absorb the information that you get when you first get diagnosed. So it's almost as if it's a completely impossible task to make a cancer survivor feel safe, secure, and comfortable when this process is ongoing. And as a result of this, because you're not just going to a restaurant and ordering a steak and saying, I want my steak medium, and they burn your steak and you send it back. You know, that's easy, right? That's easy to fix. It's not simple like going into a store and knowing exactly what you need from the store. I need a, you know, gallon of lactate milk. You go to the milk aisle, you find your lactate milk. It's simple. It's like an easy process. The whole system is just impossible because of the complexity of the disease. So right from the onset, right from that diagnosis, no matter how caring your doctor is, no matter how caring your treatment team is, that first couple of appointments is going to be a blur, and it's going to be confusing, and it's going to be overwhelming. So right from the get-go, because we're talking about life and death, we're talking about big potatoes. We're not talking about, listen, you know, I need some plastic surgery. I want to get a tummy tuck. I want to do this. I want to do that. You're not talking about a burst appendix. We're like, okay, easy. We got to go in. We got to take it out. We got to clean you out. We got to give you antibiotics and close you up. It's way, way more complicated and imperfect, and the unclarity is beyond description. So we're starting from a point, you know, as it relates to a second opinion, where the discussion of a second opinion really is important in cancer. You agree?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to have that second opinion, without a doubt.
Then you're talking about the intricacies of cancer, especially in this day and age. And when we look back 40 years from now, we're probably going to laugh about how barbaric and prehistoric we were. But now, having that lens that goes back 35 years, I mean, the concept of molecular genetics and biology and immunotherapy and all of these different things that are happening, and the changes in cancer care are so, you know, tremendous and earth-shattering, that imagine somebody who doesn't have medical sophistication. It's you're like, you don't even know what to do, right? You don't even know where to turn, what to do, what to look at. So I just want to make sure, as I'm painting this picture of imperfection, this imperfect system, this imperfect world, I think that our cancer survivors, what they deserve is to be able to go in, get their diagnosis, absorb it, understand their treatment options, and make their choices. Ask their questions, make their choices using shared decision making, which we did a module on, and all that type of thing. But boy, it breaks down right from the first step, right from that first step, when you get that information, no matter who's giving it to you, whether you're at Memorial Sloan Kettering or MD Anderson or whatever, it's going to be very hazy. And that was the analogy I was going to make from the beginning, Angel, when you talked about our hazy skies and, you know, over the and air over the last several days, you know, in the Northeast from the wildfires in Canada. That's really what our that's the lens that our survivors are looking through. For the last couple of days, I made the analogy, if you ever bought a pair of cheap sunglasses that happened to have yellow, like a yellow tint, and you would look through the world, maybe the glare of the sun was less, but the entire world was yellow and hazy. And that's exactly what the last couple of days has been. And that's kind of what the lives of our survivors are, especially during the beginning. So that's the imperfect system. And to your point, Angel, again, bullet point number four, I call it the proximate and distant geography situation. So one of the things that happens in a community cancer center is you have to look at where your community cancer center is. And I'll use us as an example, and I'll use one of the suburbs of Houston as an example. I'll use one of the suburbs of Paris as an example, one of the suburbs of Toronto as an example, and one of the suburbs of London as an example. So we all, and I think everyone knows this from listening to the podcast, we live in the Hudson Valley. It's a beautiful, green, gorgeous, hilly, mountainous, rural, rustic area. You know, in the Hudson Valley Basin, in that valley, it's very verdant and green, especially this time of the year. We have nature, we have trails and hiking and biking and little cute bucolic villages and towns and hamlets, you know, with farms, you know, and you go to the farm and you get your fruit and your vegetables, and it's just an amazing place to be. And the other thing that's great about living here is that it's not congested. It's very quiet, or at least it was until maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, getting a little busier. But in general, very nice place to live. The other advantage is if you get the real need to get in and get a real great bowl of ramen, or you want to go to a world-class museum, or if you want to go to a live theater performance, you're only about an hour and 20 minutes or so from New York City. You're not only an hour and 20 minutes away from a show and a good meal, you're also an hour and 20 minutes away from some of the best cancer centers in the world, as in Paris at the Curie Institute, as in Houston at the MD Anderson Cancer Center, as in London at the Royal Marsden, and as in Toronto at the Princess Margaret. So anybody who lives in the suburbs of those big cities, of which we are one of them, probably an hour and a half away, you have some of the best cancer centers in the world. So the question now becomes, I live close enough to go to New York City, to go to Toronto, to go to Houston, to go to Paris, to go to London, to either get my second opinion or go talk to somebody at one of these big centers, or to even get treated there. And what I tell everybody is, and we're going to learn this as we go along, yes, you can, but it's certainly not convenient and it's not ideal. And to Angel's point, there are many fantastic practitioners, and I don't even want to put myself in this category, but, you know, with my colleagues that I really respect and adore and really admire and enjoy working with them, because they make me grow and they expand me every day. People are getting the best of the big cities because we are forced, when you live this close to a big cancer center, to perform at their level. The expression is the soup's the same no matter where you go. And that's oftentimes the case. And it's going to be a point we're going to be talking about when we talk about whether or not you need a second opinion. But sometimes the soup's not the same. And that's really important too. So we call it the rule of proximate and distant geography. And I think everyone would agree. And Angel, I'm going to have you weigh in after I just finish this point. The ideal situation would be to get that type of care, that world-class, you know, big city cancer treatment close to home, in your backyard, in your community, where you don't have to worry about the expense and the exhaustion and the inconvenience of traveling in every day, sometimes for daily treatments, sometimes for weekly treatments, sometimes for every couple of weeks, whatever that number happens to be. It's not fun. Angel, your thoughts?
I agree. I think that it's funny. I can't recall off the top of my head, but I know that we had a discussion on a previous episode where we also exemplified how the importance of the relationship, which you just talked about briefly, also one of your bullets, about the relationship that you have created with that patient, which forms a bond. So here you are creating a bond with that person. You have described that there's okay for a second opinion. They could go out and get that second opinion. But my question now, within that question of that bullet that we just answered for part four, is how often, and I guess more of a direct question to you, how often do you find that that person that seeks out a second opinion now finds that they may or may not have found a better caregiver, but their insurance can't take it? or they're not?
You know, actually, I have an answer to every part that you asked, except the part about the insurance. And let's remember to you know, circle back to that. But let me get to those points about, you know, the when, how, why, and all that kind of stuff as we go through these different bullet points, because I think a lot of the questions will be answered as we move forward. But I did want to ask if you felt that your question about the geography, was that question answered?
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Okay. Now let's talk about when the soup is not the same. So I'd like to think, and this is the way I practice, and I kind of use that to help our listeners, our survivors, use it as a benchmark. So when a person comes to see me, and if it's something that I do every day and I have a great volume and a great experience with, and if my outcomes are as outstanding as they are, as far as going back to the word benchmark, as good as the benchmarks at these big centers, the first thing I'm going to tell them, you know, when I'm done with my consult and answer their questions and give them my cell phone is, okay, I want to let you know, I will help you facilitate a second opinion if that's what you want. And they'll sometimes ask me, because at this point, we're an hour into our relationship and they're feeling comfortable, to your point. And sometimes they'll say to me, do I need one? And I say the following: I always put that out so you feel comfortable doing it. And I want to just tell you, the way I practice is that if there's something I do and I feel is at the same level as the big centers, I don't feel it's really imperative, but I support if you wish to have it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people will take second opinions just because their families are pressuring them to do so. But that's my position. But I also know that we in the community can't be great at everything. And there's a very, very big difference sometimes in the quality of care. I call it the law of good versus great. So you might be able to take someone who has prostate cancer, and they say to me, all right, doc, do me a favor. I want to have a seed implantation. And I say, but I don't do that many of them. I used to do a lot of them, but I haven't done one in a while. I think I could do one pretty good. I've done them great. I'm sure I can do you a great one, but you know, I don't do them every day. I'd rather you go to see Dr. Smith, who does four of them a day, not four of them a year. And I'll have some patients say, I'm not going no matter what. Actually, I have a patient who will not go to the city, and she needs to go to the city because they would do a much better job than I would. They have the different equipment and the better equipment and better experience and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's that difference. When I feel a patient could get better care, if the soup is better at Memorial, at Mount Sinai, at NYU, at Lenox Hill, at, you know, whatever, or even further, UPenn, you know, Fox Chase, wherever, I will send them there. I will personally say, you need to go to this place. This is where you have to go. And I just think as we're going through the process of the second opinions, I think that's important for people to know, is that in their decision-making process of wondering whether or not they need a second opinion, I think that's a good point for them to keep in their minds. Will I get better care somewhere else? So that's important.
Question.
And then we'll talk about some of the potential advantages that have happened over the last couple of years. And we talk about the advantage of COVID, right? There is not many advantages of coronavirus and the terror that it instilled in the world and how it destroyed the backbone, you know, of society. But I will say the following: that I never heard of a televisit until the coronavirus. I never, like, I would call patients all the time and talk to them on the phone. But as far as telemedicine is a thing, as far as seeing patients for follow-up, not face-to-face, but on the telephone or on a video, on a WebEx or on a Zoom, or going over x-rays with a patient, not face-to-face, or getting their second opinions on a computer where they don't have to leave their, they could have on their little bunny slippers and still have their opinion with a world expert in lymphoma or sarcoma or leukemia or whatever. Imagine that. So that's another avenue that we're going to talk about a little bit when it comes to second opinion. The other thing is that people don't realize is that cancer, even in the community, is a collaborative endeavor. So it's not just an endeavor between your radiation oncologist and your surgeon or your medical oncologist. It's all of them talking and communicating together and going over the case, both informally as well as formally in what's called the tumor board. So all cancer centers have to have tumor boards. Some of them have more developed tumor boards, where you'll have a breast tumor board and a GI tumor board and a neuro tumor board and a GU tumor board and GYN tumor board. But some of them just have a general tumor board. But either way, your case, especially if it's an interesting, unusual case, should be presented in a collaborative manner. So you're really, without even knowing it, getting 12, 14, 16, 20 second opinions without even leaving your couch. So between the televisits and the collaboration with the tumor boards, that's another thing where you're actually achieving what it is that you want anyway. So it's really, really important to keep that in mind. Angel, if I were to tell you there's also a downside to a second opinion, would you think that I'm crazy or would you agree with me?
No, I would agree with that.
And actually, the studies, you know, bear that out. Second opinions could sometimes be harmful, and we're going to do a deep dive into that. You can get more confused, you know, by going for a second opinion. You can have your care delayed. One of the big centers, Memorial, especially in my experience, I'm not going to say this across the board, but in my experience, especially patients that don't have, you know, the wherewithal or don't have the capacities, getting in to go to Memorial, which is thought of, you know, everybody's mind up, at least up in the Hudson Valley, it's like Memorial, Memorial, Memorial. You know, but getting into Memorial, you need to get all your records, all your slides, put everything together. You have to send it to them. They have to evaluate it. They have to check your insurance. They have to do this. They have to do that. Then by the time you get a consult with somebody, it's like 3 weeks later, you know, not a great situation. You know, I think the ideal world would be, hey, doc, want a second opinion, want to go to Memorial. Okay, Dr. Moskowitz is, you know, he's the guy for lymphoma, or Dr. This is the one for lung, and Dr. Whatever is the one for colorectal, and they'll see you tomorrow. You know, that doesn't exist. That world does not exist. So that could be also a disadvantage. Also, it's like Groundhog Day sometimes. It's like you go there, you're confused by your community doctor, you go to a big center, and you're doubly confused. And it's almost like you're waking up to the same nightmare, except the doctor looks different. They're wearing a stiff white coat and they have a cacophony of residents and medical students, you know, that are tailing them almost like Pigpen, you know, that was, has all the dirt following him. They have all these residents and nurses and nurse practitioners and things and PAs. The only difference is you're in a different, you know, exam room. Otherwise, it's exactly the same. My kids would say same, same, but different, right? The other thing is you sometimes feel like you're chasing your tail. So just when you think you know what you want and you go to a second opinion just to come because your husband said you have to go or your cousin said you have to go and you go and you think you know what you want and then you go talk to them and then they confuse you even more and now you have no idea what you want to do. So it's sort of like, you know, I always say sometimes going to a restaurant that has a limited menu is a lot easier than going to a Greek diner where you don't know whether you should get the Reuben or you should get the cheeseburger deluxe or you should get, you know, the waffles or, you know, you have no idea what to get because the menu is just too big. So it's the same type of thing. Angel, what would you also say would be another potential downside to getting a second opinion? And you might be surprised by this because it's almost like a paradox.
For me, because I've had this experience, unfortunately, the downfall is that you are given a diagnosis that is far worse than what you were originally told. And in reality, it was the total opposite.
That's definitely, but that's actually, but believe it or not, that may be hard to hear, But that's actually a good thing because then you achieve clarity, right? So you're getting a different, like you have two different opinions that are conflicting. And one's a world-class opinion. And I have seen world-class opinions being wrong. I've seen doctors in the city disagree with my assessment and them being wrong. I have also learned a tremendous amount from people in the city. I just sent a lady I saw today that we were all set to do chemo radiation for her head and neck cancer, her laryngeal cancer. And I said, you know, there's just something, you know, that instinct. When you do something long enough, you kind of get that gut feeling. And I said, do me a favor, go see my friend at Mount Sinai. This is the larynx guy of the shahs and the kings and the, you know, the presidents and prime ministers. Go see my friend Mark Corey over at Mount Sinai. And she went and he called me, said, you know, I think we'll get a better outcome if we do X, Y, and Z, not, you know, A, B, and C. And I said, Mark, she's in your hands. God bless you. Thank you for that, you know, knowledge. So sometimes, you know, that's not a terrible thing, you know, so that's a good thing. But what I think is a really huge potential downside is that what are the possibilities that asking for and going for a second opinion? Now, I'm not talking about the urology guy that we started our podcast talking about. I'm talking about just your regular average, you know, community oncologist. And I'm going to put myself in this category because, again, we are all human. We all have human feelings, right? So can that second opinion tarnish the relationship that you have with the doctor who's eventually going to take care of you in the community? And the answer is possibly. And again, I'm going to be honest. I put myself, even though I'm the first one to offer a second opinion and help and do what I can, you know, we have feelings. We're human. We have pride. We put, and you know, anyone who's like me, and most, thank God, most of my colleagues are feel the same way I do, and you know, really put their entire souls into their job, their sweat, their blood. They go the extra mile. It does hurt a little bit when you hear, you know, doc, thank you. You've been amazing. I really enjoyed you. You're funny. And God, we had such a positive experience. And I've never met anybody like you, but that's like going on one of your bad dates, right? So, you know, you go, you think the date is going really well. And then all of a sudden, you know, you know, I don't know if I want to go on a second date with you, but do you mind giving me, you know, the number of Brian, you know, your best friend? You know, can you give me Brian's number? You know, you know, you say, oh yeah, okay, sure, good for Brian. Here's the number. God bless. I hope you have a great life. But there's a part of you know, maybe that little ego that gets a little hurt. So I can't say that that's not something to consider for us, at least to have a funny conversation about. It's almost like your own kids, right? So you try to be equal with your kids, but every once in a while, you know, one of them is going to really piss you off and whatever. And like, you know, you got that sort of li that little, we call it that little malocchio in Italian. You have that little bit of an edge to you when that happens, but just food for thought. I also want to talk about a little bit of where you are on the map. So sometimes second opinions are can be, you know, derived or not derived on where you are on that cancer scale. So I just talked to three people, three men today with prostate cancer, and they all had very curable prostate cancer. And the cool thing about my opinion was that there were about six or seven things that they could have done. And the beauty of it is that every single one, I think we hit on this a couple of weeks ago. Every single choice was exactly the same. Every single choice was equal. It wasn't like a vertical, like this is the best, this is the second best, this is the third best, this is the fourth best. It was like you can do surgery, you could do nothing, you could do radiation this way, you could do radiation that way, you can do radiation this way, that way. And why don't you take a few weeks, think about it, think what's good for you, what's a good fit, go for your second opinion, and then come back and see me. That's a really low-level DEFCON 1 situation where certainly going for a second opinion is fine, but you're good because you can't make a bad the choice because there are no bad answers. It's like going for a test and you already have the answers to the test. So in those cases, you're not, you know, when you look at that, where are you on the map? You are here. You're good. You're in a safe place. You're like right in a cop, you know, in a police station. You're perfect. You're good. Bucket two is a little more complex. So it's not the most complex, but there are some nuances to the case that may require that second opinion, something that might be helpful. I saw a woman today, 74 years old with breast cancer, very small tumor. The tumor was like the size of a pin. She had receptor, you know, hormone receptor, breast cancer, but her genetics were very bad. So her OncoDX, which is sort of what is the potential for this cancer being more aggressive than we think it is, was very high. Now, ordinarily, I would say to her, you know, you're not going to get chemo. You're 74 years old. Just take the hormone pill. You'll be fine. Do a little sprinkling of radiation. Not a problem. But on a case like that, she might go to the city and the breast oncologist who only does breast oncology and knows every study and every clinical trial, they may say, you know what? You know, Ianelli's like, I understand what he's saying, but he's completely wrong. You're 74. Your chances of living to 85 are greater than 75%. This is an aggressive tumor. This OncoDX really means something. And despite the fact that it looks and smells and walks like a horse, it's not a horse, it's a zebra. And you need to treat this differently than you would treat a horse. Right. And, you know, in those cases, second opinions may be helpful.
Right.
The third bucket is the people who absolutely need a second opinion. Like, no brainer, you have to go. Another patient that I saw, you know, had several courses of radiation in the brain. Now she recurred. And it's in sort of the fluid system of the brain. Mm. And she needs to get a specialized machine with specialized treatments that we can absolutely not do well here. We have, you know, I don't want to say zero experience, but close to zero experience. And they do it in the city, not all the time, but enough to have a comfort level. And that patient's care needs to be done in the city. But that's going to be up to the patient. But the bottom line is there's a difference between the three buckets. And I think when you're talking to your family about what bucket you're in, that will help you delineate whether or not you need that second opinion. And going to the data, again, Denise always tells me, you know, try to keep the data short and sweet. So I will. But I did want to look at the actual science behind evaluating the second opinion process. So this is a paper from the oncologist. Primary author is Dr. Hillen, Dr. Mary Hillen from Amsterdam. And basically what they did was they took 25 studies. This was a meta-analysis, which means they take all the studies as it relates to second opinions, and they sort of put it in a big computer, and they try to come up with some commonalities and some assessments of what this all means. And of all of these studies, of which many of them were very high level, very high quality studies, they reported that the rates of second opinion ranged from between 1% and 88%. And when you look at who seeks these second opinions, these are people usually of higher education, people who have more schooling, are most consistently seeking a second opinion. The primary motivations of getting a second opinion were a need for certainty or confirmation, a lack of trust, a dissatisfaction with communication, or the need for more personalized information. The reported rates of diagnostic or therapeutic discrepancies, meaning the differences of opinion, can vary between 2% and 51%, depending on the study you're looking at. So this is actually the hardcore science. And what the hardcore science says, as most of the things we talk about in cancer and on this podcast, is nobody knows the answer. So the answer is there is no answer. But at least you kind of have an idea of the direction and some of the challenges. And just to sort of round out tonight's podcast, this is a bit of a longer podcast than I wanted. And we're going to do 3 weeks of this. But a couple of things to think about and to end with tonight. Is there enough time to wait for a second opinion? And what are the reasons that you want to get the second opinion? Do you want to make sure that you've explored all of your options? Do you think that your doctor is underestimating how serious your situation is? Just like happened to my friend Angel. Your doctor is not sure what's wrong with you, so they don't know what's going on. You have a very rare and unusual cancer. You think another treatment might be available. Your doctor is not a specialist in that particular kind of cancer. As I said, some cancer centers, you're an oncologist, not a general oncologist, but a breast oncologist or a prostate oncologist or a kidney oncologist or a colorectal oncologist. Your doctor tells you there's uncertainty about the type or stage of cancer you have. Your doctor gives you different treatment options and you're confused. You have trouble understanding and communicating with your doctor, or you want your options explained by another doctor. You just want peace of mind that you have the correct diagnosis and you're doing the right thing. You want affirmation, or you want to get those family members off your back. Your insurance company, finally, I told you I would get to you, ask you to get another opinion before you start. And we'll talk about next week about the insurance companies that, even though you want to have a second opinion, won't support you. Last, I'm going to leave you on a good note. Remember, on the Croc podcast, we don't just delineate problems. We try to come up with answers. One of the things that could help you even avoid a second opinion, or we're not even looking on this podcast to try to dissuade you from a second opinion, just give you the information, you know, that you can make your own decision. But one of the things that will help you is, number one, going into your community cancer center for that opinion, you need to do the following. You have to be prepared. It's like being prepared for a test. Take a family member or a friend with you, so you have two people listening, or someone that you know who might have some medical sophistication. It doesn't have to be a doctor, a nurse, a physical therapist. It could just be someone who might be in the sciences or have had family members or personal experiences with cancer. Take notes on what your doctor says. I might be unusual. I let people tape me. Maybe a lot of doctors don't do that, especially with these smartphones, right? They have that capacity to do those transcriptions, but that's another option if your doctor would let you, and then you could listen to it later. Ask if there's any pamphlets or booklets or information about what you're telling them, or even if somebody has medical sophistication. I've shared medical articles, journal articles with patients as it relates to their treatment options. And lastly, again, I already said, ask to record your talks to look back. Angel, your thoughts.
You know, I think this was a great episode, and I don't think it matters how long we went. I think what really matters is that we actually got a lot of answers. I mean, I myself had many questions, and I think I have 100 more. So I'm going to say this. I'm going to encourage everybody from the Croc Nation that if you have questions, this is a great opportunity. This is a great episode for you to actually utilize social media and do everything in your part to reach out to us, because you will get us, primarily you will get Dr. E, and he can and will return your questions. Because I think this is something for the next 3 weeks that needs to be addressed. And I think there's a lot of questions that are going to come from this.
Angel, thank you for everything, everybody. Angel Santana, sometimes your second opinion doesn't have to be from a doctor. It could be, you know, coming from our creator. And Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin. He does a podcast that is spiritual and helpful. And I would recommend everybody do a second opinion from my podcast to his podcast. Rod Freeman, it was good seeing you today. Thank you for doing everything for our cancer survivors. Small Biz Up, you help all the people with their little side hustles, their little websites, their little, you know, jobs and things. And if they want to do anything creative, you're certainly the guy. Thank you for your time, your effort, and your expertise for our survivors. The board of directors are always there for you guys. You don't know them really. You've heard them on the podcast. You know who they are by us speaking of them. But believe me when I tell you, they're selfless and they're really only interested in making your survivorship better. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, for your support and belief in us. And now it's time for our little pep talk. You guys just were told, some of you out there, that you have cancer. and you're thinking, oh my God, this is it. This is it. This is going to be the thing that gets me. I have to go see my doctor tomorrow over in, you know, Bismarck, North Dakota, in, you know, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, in Pensacola, Florida, you know, in Middletown, New York, wherever you happen to be, and you're going to your local doctor and you're thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? Do I need to now find money, get a loan, take out a second mortgage to go into the city and drive an hour and a half and spend $75 a day on parking and gas? And do I need to do this? Or my doctor, I don't understand what they're saying, and my head is spinning and my family is screaming and I have no idea what to do. Let me start by telling you, this podcast is for you. Angel and I are here for you. The board of directors are here to give you the information you need. Today, next week, and the week after, we're going to be talking about second opinions to help you guys figure out what's best for you, how to proceed in your journey. But it's not just about second opinions, and it's not just about finding new doctors. It's about the waiting room, and it's about how you need to be spoken to by your doctor and what your rights are. And insurance companies are trying to take advantage of you and discontinue you because you have cancer and your job wants to fire you, and people are looking at you different and you're depressed and you feel terrible and you're suffering the side effects of your treatment. This podcast is for you guys because you guys are truly amazing. You are brave. You are courageous. You are worthy. You are loved. You are kick ass. You guys got this. You guys are going to beat this. Your survivorship is going to be better because of you, because of who you are and about how strong you are. So we end again with a blessing, and Angel, and on behalf of Angel and all of us here at the Croc Podcast, we always wish every one of our amazing survivors a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God be with you. God bless you. Peace.